Welcome to the Midday with Vicki and Norman.
And today we're pleased to have pianist Warren Jones with us, a pianist who's worked with many, many great performers and is here in Madison actually working with some great performers as well and giving a master class. And so we'll talk a little bit about that and maybe some of your experiences on stage.
Okay, great.
Thanks for being here.
We kind of waltzed around with the terms, haven't we? It's exactly what it is you do. So the term used to be accompanist, and then now I hear people using this sort of dangerous sounding word collaborator.
And how about pianist?
Does pianist
that work?
Cover it?
I'm in favor of pianist, frankly. Violinists don't study to be chamber music violinists or orchestra violinists. They just are violinists, and violists are violists, and we're all glad for that. And, you know, pianists are pianists. I believe we should all play all different kinds of music. We should all be involved in all different kinds of music because that's how we grow and become better-rounded people and better-rounded musicians. I encourage my students to play all different kinds of music. I was talking with my colleague Martha Fisher here at the university about that this morning. I think I have my students play, even though they're getting a degree in, we still call it accompanying at Manhattan School of Music, for a reason that I can tell you in a bit if you like. But even though they're getting a degree in accompanying, I have them play a lot of solo music, a lot of chamber music. I have them involved in the orchestra at the school, involved in playing, for example, in the pit, in the opera, working with harpsichord, all different kinds of stuff, because they're going to benefit every time they are exposed to a different type of music making.
Now, I am curious why it's still called accompanying it.
Well, we were presented probably about 5 years ago. The school, Manhattan School, wanted to revamp its catalog and revamp its website. And we were presented with a rather forceful memo from the management that we should fall in line and call ourselves collaborative pianists. And it took me about 10 seconds to realize that the revamp of the website meant that if we were called collaborative piano, we would be behind the brass in alphabetically. And right now, we are first in line in the alphabet with AC. And so we get the biggest exposure on the website and in the catalog because they insist on doing things alphabetically. And we take advantage.
Something to be said for top billing.
Yes, there is, for sure.
A is for accompanist.
Well, we're going to start with B and Brahms here.
Very good.
And this is one of the great voices, great performers you've worked with, Håkan Haugegaard.
For sure.
And we're going to hear the first of these Opus 105 Lieder by Johannes Brahms with Warren Jones at the piano.
Leise durch den Sinn, wie Frühlingsblumen blüht es und schwebt wie Duft dahin.
Is there ever any danger of you, the pianist, stealing the show?
Well, before I answer the question, I have to tell you that I'm very gratified to hear that because I've never listened to that.
Oh.
And that's the first time I've ever heard it.
These things continue to amaze me. I don't know about Vicki, but
I mean, yeah. I remember listening to the editing session, but I never have heard the finished product of this record. So
I've
never listened to it. And it was pretty good.
So, I'd say it was a real treat.
I'm very well pleased with that. Thank you very much.
Glad to be the first.
Well, some people talk about your playing as illuminating, and you are another singer, really, on the stage. Your playing is very vocal and very much supportive of the singer. Is there a particular, obviously there's a lot of training involved in that, but there's also an inner musical sense that brings that about?
I'm constantly singing inside, hopefully not audibly for the public, but I am constantly singing inside and singing along while I'm playing. I think that's necessary in the same way that hopefully the singer understands and is singing along when I'm playing. So because you know, we make music together. We cannot react. There's no time to react. There's only time to act, and you have to do it at the same time, and that amounts to singing together, and that's what we do.
You came into music from an avenue not used by many, I would say. Your father ran a filling station. Was it near High Point, North Carolina?
My God, how do you know that?
Oh, it's that information is everywhere.
Oh, okay. Yes, he did. He was very good. He could sell ice cubes to Eskimos, frankly. I mean, he was a consummate salesman and was very successful at that. And I learned a great deal being there. So, really.
Musically, though, I mean, you had somewhere along the line, somebody figured out you have perfect pitch.
Well, I do. As I get older, I find that my perfect pitch is quite dependent on how tired I am.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be true, I suppose, of many things, wouldn't it?
I can hear pretty in a pretty wacky way if I'm really tired. but generally, I try to you know, stay on pitch if I can. But no, but I'm not kidding when I say that I learned a great deal working there. I find a lot of times the best musical lessons are learned away from music. I mean, I can tell you. 15 stories right now about things that I learned in the most improbable places where I just sort of stood back and went, okay, that's what that's about. And then when I sat down to play the next time, I played differently because music is about life. And so you have to live. And, and in living, you learn about music.
Well, just the other day, I think it's Connect, was reading that Harper Lee, who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, said right. that she wrote while playing golf. You know, I mean, it's not like you're just kind of sitting there doing nothing but art.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you have to do it all together.
It's not disconnected.
No.
And you have a great memory. It's easy for you to memorize music. Is that helpful?
Yes, it's always been easy for me to memorize. When I was in undergrad school, there was a teacher there at New England Conservatory who was not my teacher, but was a very fine teacher. And she walked up to me one day in the hall and asked me point blank. She was always a little bit curt. And she walked up and without saying hello or anything, she said, "Warren, do you know how you memorize?" And I said, I thought about it. I thought, well, no. And I looked her straight in the face and said, "I have no idea." She said, "Well, you should find out, because you should figure that out, because later in life you will find that it's not so easy. And so you have to know what you're doing in order to be able to do it as you get older." And so I took her at her word, and I started figuring out how I did it. Not to get in my way, but just to know what I was doing. And I have several different techniques for memorizing. My favorite one involves the house that I grew up in, because that house had a central hallway, which was surrounded by the rooms of the house. And in order to go from any room to another room, you had to go into the hallway. Hmm. And so that's how I memorized, for example, rondos, because you always have to go back to the hall to get to the next room. And you walk down the hall to the next room. And so I compartmentalize in that way and think in compartments and can memorize like that. And it's a question, it's just simply a question of memorizing the details of the room that I'm in, and then go into the hall, do the hall again, and with some differences, because if you're at a different place in the hall is a little different, and then go into a different room and play that room.
Well, let's see. They terrific. Say that architecture is frozen music, so that right, taps exactly. into that too.
Exactly. Or another way that I do it is what I call... I definitely memorize a good deal of the time through choreography, which has to do with just simply, it's more than muscle memory. It's about knowing the gesture that I'm making at the keyboard and how that relates to the music that's coming out of my fingers. And literally, it's like learning, there are some pieces that I memorize by learning to dance and just sort of dance and play. Uh-huh. And I learned the dance, and the dance inevitably fits the music, because again, dance is music too. You know, it's just a whole different type of thinking. So, I mean, there are a lot of different ways that I do it. So, you know, some of them. One famously failed me a few years ago at the University of Florida. I was doing a recital with Kiri Takanawa, and we were doing the Rachmaninoff vocales. And for me, the vocales defies practically every way of memorizing. And but I have a way. I do it by what I call the string technique. And the string has to do with just literally, you have a ball of string and you unroll the ball. Now, the crucial thing to do in that way of memorization for me is to stay on the string. You have to stay with the string. Because if you're off the string, you're off. You know? Well, the third phrase, and I will never forget this concert because it's the only time, I've played the piano in public for 50 years now, and it's the only time in 50 years that I've ever stopped in public. The third phrase of the vocalese, I mean, I've heard Kiri sing a great deal, but the third phrase of the vocalese that evening, she sang with a voice that was ungodly. It was, of such overarching, incredibly surpassing beauty that I was so taken. I just stopped playing. I couldn't play. I had no idea where I was. And I was really off the string. And I just took my hands off the keyboard and put them in my lap. I couldn't play. And, you know, she turned around and looked at me and I said, I can't play. You know, I said that to her. And we started laughing because it was too stupid. I mean, and then I had no idea where I was. We couldn't do the piece. We just went on to the next piece. But
I've never heard a story like that.
No.
I'm sure the audience, all 3,000 of those people must have thought we were wacky because we were sitting there laughing on stage. And she understood perfectly. You know, she has times where her memory fails her.
But this wasn't exactly memory. It was more as if you were just simply listening to something else.
I literally couldn't play. I was just, it blocked everything. Wow. It was amazing.
That's power.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed that one.
Well, that is the danger, I guess, of working with people who are capable of producing those ethereal qualities.
But there are all kinds of stories about pianists who perform with singers, and somehow they get off the track. Have you ever been in one of these situations where you have to do a little vamping or something until the singer catches up or until you get back together?
Well, I think my best example of that was at the University of Kansas one night with a very well-known soprano. We were doing a Handel aria, and we got into the A section of the aria, and she skipped two pages.
Oops.
Without batting an eyelash, she just skipped two pages. So I just skipped over with her. And then at the end of the A section, she sang a cadenza, which she hadn't sung in any rehearsal. And I caught it. And then we start into the B section. And in the B section already, she starts singing Ornaments, which she hadn't sung in the rehearsal. Then she sang an entirely different cadenza. And I saw a train wreck coming toward me because we go back to the A section now.
You do have
to
end together, too, somewhere.
Well, no, the question is, now she's singing Ornaments, and which I've never heard. So I have no idea where she is. And there's the complication coming. Is she going to skip the two pages again?
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is like playing roulette. It's like red or black, so you have a 50% chance. I went with the idea that she would skip, and she did. Then we came to the cadenza at the end. She sang another cadenza. We walked off the stage. We finished together, fine. The audience clapped. We walked off the stage, and she blithely looked at me. And in the most innocent tone of voice, this was her summation of that. She said, I hope you don't mind that extra high note I sang at the end of the music.
Which one?
And I looked at her and I said, no problem, really no problem. Let's go sing some more. Come on.
Well, that's, of course, the mark of the expert is to be able to go with any kind of eventuality in a situation.
Well, it's like most jobs. They don't pay you when things are going well. They pay you for when things get awry. How do you get back?
Well, we've got time for some more music between now and the quiz question.
I think so. This is a piece by Fauré, and at your request, I hope you've heard this one before, but if not, here is your opportunity.
To tell you the truth, I haven't. I know I have never listened
You're
to this.
You're in for a treat.
Okay, good. Yeah,
this is Barbara Bonney and the song Notre Amour, Our Love. Barbara Bonney, soprano, and Warren Jones, piano, with Notre Amour by Gabriel Fauré.
Well, you mentioned a train wreck. We're going to have a horse wreck a little later, so be prepared for that.
Yeah, for that. I'm wondering, you were a conductor early on, and I imagine that that also fed into this ability to be a great pianist with another performer?
Well, in a certain way. I mean, I've never been that interested in conducting. I've done some of it, and lately I've been asked again about conducting, which I'm doing some of. So I just had a tour in Asia back in November with the Italian tenor who is now making a pretty big sensation at the Metropolitan, Salvatore Licitra.
Oh, yes.
We did several concerts in Europe, in Asia, and had a very good time with those. I mean, I programmed those concerts to my strengths as well as his, and we had a good time. So I'm doing more of it. Conducting is an incredibly different exercise in making music, but once again, one that, you know, informs and amplifies other parts of music making.
Mm-hmm.
It's a riding along on an orchestra is quite something. Now, that's the best way to describe it.
Now, what a perfect lead-in for this next song, this riding along.
Yeah, you couldn't have set it up better, could you?
I think we're gonna listen to a song called Charlie Rutledge, which is a story of a Texas cowboy on the ranch of the I forget the name of the ranch in the text, but which was an actual ranch. Mm-hmm. It was an actual ranch in Texas. Actually, the first ranch that was capitalized by Wall Street business interests in Texas, which I did not know when I made this recording, but this ranch was capitalized by Eastern businessmen who were intent on making a profit. And it's interesting that Ives picked that ranch in this text because, you know, he worked in the Wall Street area in New York and was very familiar with Eastern establishment banking and insurance interests. And in the song, Charlie Rutledge, who is a very popular cowboy, goes out on a cattle drive and his cutting horse slips and falls on him in a hail, in a furious moment, in a stampede, and he dies. And you'll see. You'll hear it.
And who is the singer?
This is with Samuel Ramey.
Charlie Rutledge.
The good cowpuncher has gone to meet his fate. I hope he'll find a resting place within face to face, and that they'll grasp him by the right hand at the shining throne, the shining throne, the shining throne of grace.
Try playing that one at home.
Charlie Rutledge by Charles Ives, Samuel Ramey, and Warren Jones having an equal part in that story at the piano.
Definitely.
You play that with your elbows, or how do you play that horse falling over part?
Well, at a certain point, Ives writes in the score, the notes are approximate. It's the rhythm that counts. And then eventually, there are no notes written. It's just big, huge clusters indicated. And the only way to do it is with your forearms. So just the crash of the horse is both my forearms on the middle of the keyboard. And then there's notes written that you have to hold down. Mm. As you pull your forearms away, you get certain notes.
Oh, that endure through the crash.
That's right. And as the dust clears, the chord comes out of it.
So. Got to be a great concert piece. People must love that. Like
they do. They go crazy.
Well, I know you'll enjoy your time here, too. You have a master class this afternoon with UW-Madison School of Music students, singers and pianists.
And pianists, yes, exactly. We're doing all Brahms songs. We have a week here at the university, which is dedicated to Brahms. And we did a concert last evening on Sunday evening, and then we have another one tomorrow evening at 7:30.
And that has some Hungarian dances. You're playing those with Martha Fischer.
Right.
Some duets.
And we're doing the Brahms E-flat clarinet sonata. And also the trio, which is the transcription by Theodore Kirchner of the Brahms B-flat sextet, the Opus 18 sextet. It's a transcription for piano trio, which is quite fascinating.
Now, that'll be interesting because I believe the Pro Arte Quartet later this week is playing both of the
playing the real
sextets.
Thing.
So you could hear this and then the original.
Well, one of the things I'm finding interesting about transcriptions is that we have to remember that we have not always had this recording medium to spread music. And in their time, in Brahms's time, one of the most popular ways of spreading the popularity of music was to write things in different mediums so that other people yes. could play them. And the point of the transcription, in a certain way, is to broaden the audience for the real thing. So hopefully the people will come on Tuesday evening and like it and come back later in the week and hear the real thing.
Yes, it's a good chance of that.
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been fun.